The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Andy? Yeah! Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Tuesday, 24th day of July, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow up 100, down 156. S&P down 16, comp down 24, gold off about $6. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Was there an issue with the Dealey Bob?
No, I had accidentally taken the charts as soon as I logged on.
I see.
That was all.
I see. You sound,
is that what you mean?
You sound extraordinarily loud. Do I sound extraordinarily unloud?
I don't know. Yours seems about normal, and mine should be about normal.
Okay, because you're pegging the meter here, and
am I?
I'm not. So.
Okay, well, let me see if I can turn it down some.
Well, that may be good. Let's poll the audience. That's always fun.
How's that? Is that any better?
Yeah, you're crystal clear. That's not a problem.
Okay. Other guys are saying you seem lower than usual.
Well, yeah, because I did turn my mic down a little bit because I was listening last night as I uploaded, and there was a lot of system noise and background noise, and it didn't sound so good. I can take mine up. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, that's better from your end. Yep.
Better test.
Yes, that is better.
Now, I'll tell you where it was. And this was, let's see, that's number three. It was up here. You hear that hiss?
Yes, okay. I do hear the hiss.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get rid of. So let's back it off to here. And now we'll poll our lovely studio audience once again.
Okay. How's that?
Oh, it may be that I have my headset turned up louder than normal.
That could be it.
That might be why you sound louder.
Yeah, all right. That could be it.
Okay. All right, so to our active poll participant, Greg, how's that? Test. All right, well, we'll leave it like that till somebody complains, and then we'll fiddle with it some more.
All right.
Okay, the news that came out last night, Moody's has now downgraded Germany, and Merkel says, that's a lot of hooey, we're still the safe haven. Now, out of the 17-member Eurozone, the only one that hasn't been knocked down a peg or two is Finland. So apparently it does pay to keep a low profile. That's what I'm thinking.
Sounds reasonable.
I mean, Finland, you just... Except that one tragedy thing you were talking about earlier in the live trading room. But other than that, you just don't hear much about Finland. And so this reaction... here to the downside, it seems a bit delayed to be tied in to the news about Germany, but you know, sometimes you get that. You get a delayed effect. Now, the European markets closed right as we were closing the live trading room, and as often happens, right, Michael, we close the live trading room,
correct,
and we get a big move. So, there you go. We watched this thing all morning, and what do we got within one tick so far of the zone? And that's
yep,
what we
within
were,
a tick of that zone.
That's what we were looking for and waiting for.
I was saying early on that I thought we were going to get down to that zone, that it might not be directly down to the zone. It might come back up. But I thought we were going to get down there. I was saying that at about 10:30.
Now, that is our lowest weekly trading zone for the week on the ES. We hit our lowest zone yesterday on the YM, but we never made the trip all the way down on the ES, which begs a good question. Where are we on the YM? Okay. Yeah, that makes sense that we pegged.
On the YM, we are.
We pegged a little bit below that. We're down
yep,
at,
we did. That's a new low of the week right there.
Yeah. So, today's Tuesday. The week is young. So, at this point, now that we've completed everything to the downside, you know, I'm not saying we won't go any lower. I'm just saying this is a potential place to start looking for where the market is going to put in its bottom and start attempting to climb higher. Big news in Kansas City. Google is scheduled to launch its super-fast internet service called Google Fiber this Thursday. I forget how they did it. There was some kind of competition. Cities got to put their name in the hat based on some criteria. And for whatever reason, Kansas City got selected. This was a couple years ago, I think. Google Fiber will provide gigabit internet to subscribers. Gigabit internet lets you download data at 1 gigabit per second. That's a lot, which is about 100 times faster than the cable or DSL connection that most people use today. Now think about that. Maybe you already have a fast internet connection. Michael, you have a pretty fast one. I have a pretty fast one. But 100 times faster? Wow. What will we do with all that speed? Yeah, it's a lot. It really is. Now, it's going to be big, not just for the folks in Kansas City, but ultimately Google plans to roll this out across the country and perhaps around the world. And it has established internet providers like Time Warner Cable worried. In fact, Time Warner is offering cash rewards to people with information on Google Fiber's deployment. So, keep an eye on Google. They have kind of represented the internet for quite a while. And now they're not only going to be the internet, they're going to deliver the internet. They're going to bring it right up to your door. And they're going to do it really fast. There's an interesting article today in Business Insider about how Apple is hiding billions in profits. It's money that they think someday they could have to... They would like to bring it home to the U.S., but they can't because they'll have to pay taxes. So they're not spending it. They're not giving it as a dividend to shareholders. They're just kind of holding it offshore and earmarking it as money that they potentially might have to pay the government. But they think that the potential for a tax amnesty is right around the corner. And now we are experiencing difficulties with the audio conference. Okay. And the internet is now disconnected. Great. Well, that's a problem when you do an internet radio talk show. Okay, we lost internet. See, that's so funny. You start talking about the internet providers. Okay, see, because I'm on Cox. And as soon as I start talking about Google and how they're going to change the world and bring the internet to every doorstep, what happens? My internet goes down.
Bang.
Now, come on.
Just cut you right off.
Now, seriously, is that a coincidence? No, I don't think so.
That just wasn't nice.
Now, I'm not going to read the entire article about Apple and all this money that's held offshore because it's very lengthy, and most of you would probably find it, you know, boring. So let me give you just a little snippet. Like other companies, Apple typically keeps profits on overseas sales in overseas accounts. When someone buys an iPad in Paris or Sydney, for instance, the profit stays outside of the United States. Now, Apple may pay some corporate income tax on that profit to the country where it actually sells the iPad, but it minimizes those taxes by using various accounting moves to shift profits to countries with low tax rates. For example, the strategy known as the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich routes profits through Irish and Dutch subsidiaries and then to the Caribbean. When it comes to using creative tax techniques, Apple is no different from other multinational corporations. And just like other corporations, Apple leaves cash overseas. If it brought the money home, it would have to pay federal income taxes on the money. They would be given a credit for the foreign taxes they've already paid, but it would be a staggering sum of money. In Apple's case, those overseas accounts have grown to a staggering $74 billion. That is equal to the market value of Citigroup.
And that's just cash they have lying around.
Just pocket change. And the money's accumulating overseas because corporations are counting on lower U.S. tax rates in the future. At 35%, the U.S. corporate tax rate is among the highest for developed countries. In 2004, Congress enacted a one-year tax holiday for overseas earnings, and multinationals are hoping for a repeat of that. Presidential candidate Mitt Romney wants to permanently eliminate federal taxes on overseas profits. President Obama attacked the idea last week, saying it won't create U.S. jobs like the Romney campaign contends. So, interesting article, interesting tax strategy to avoid for as long as possible paying taxes on $74 billion. Now, Michael, this morning on the news front, did we have a jobs? No, we didn't have a jobs report.
No, we didn't have jobs.
We had a... What did we have?
Richmond Manufacturing Index was one, and HPI, I think. Let me just go check it out.
Okay, that was the one I was thinking of, is the Richmond, because that thing came in so bad. I'm trying to think of who it was that made the comment. He said that based on that, the U.S. GDP is going to zero, and that's not good. See, the Richmond Manufacturing Index, that in and of itself is not a high-impact report, but it came in at minus 17. It was forecast at zero, and previous was minus 3.
Yeah, it's never been minus 17. And, well, if you look back, I don't know, 6 months, the lowest it was, yeah, minus 3 was the lowest it was. So
it's a survey of about 100 manufacturers in the Richmond area which ask respondents to rate the relative level of business condition, including shipments, new orders, and employment. And so I'm trying to think of the guy's name that tied this into... Oh, Bill Gross. Pemco, Bond King, ring a bell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he said that this points to the GDP of the United States heading to zero. So I guess we need to hope he's wrong. However, he does have a habit of getting it right. So why don't you take the charts, the mic,
right.
Do the recap, and we'll move on.
Okay, I will do just that. Let's see here. Change it to me.
And there we go, 27.28, we just hit it.
Yep, we finally hit it. I made that extra tick. All right, so everyone should be looking at my charts now. Yes, good. All right, I'm going to start the recording up. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, July 24th, 2012. We're going to go over the trades we took in the live trading room this morning and all that stuff. Let me start right out with the results. On the ES, we had two trades. We ended up break even on the morning. One was a win, one was a loss. On the crude, we had three trades, I think, and we ended plus 15 ticks. On the NQ, we had a couple of trades, and we ended plus 3 ticks. All right. We didn't trade it all on the YM. I'll go over some YM stuff, but we didn't trade it all on the YM this morning. Now, before I go any further, if you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for the free trial. In the free trial, you get 5 days with us in the live trading room, 5 business days. You get all the indicators and charts that you see here, and then some. You get the charting package, all the data feeds and all that stuff for free for 5 business days. No credit card required. Just go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Okay? All we need is your name and email address really to send stuff off to you. All right. Moving on. I think I just showed you the... Here's the crude, 15 ticks. Here's the NQ, 3 ticks. Here's the ES, 0 ticks. And that was my morning trading in the live trading room. Let's just go over the actual trades here. Now, there are a bunch of trades that set up in the morning. You know, all the little circle areas here that you see are trades that actually set up that I either took or didn't take. Actually, I didn't take. All the ones with the yellow arrows are trades that I did take. All right, my first trade of the morning was right here. We had a bullish cross right there. We had a bullish cross, and price pulled back down to the BBC here. You see, we had bullish divergence down here. Tested the BBC, gave an up close. I went long. It stopped me out right away. I said, look for the reversal of that. It turned around, came back up here, tested the BBC. We had bearish divergence right here. I shorted the close of that, and I took some profit right there. Got back above break-even on that. Let's see. Moving along in here, I missed some trades in here. You can see in here, we didn't really have any bearish divergence in here, but the green turned down into this strong sloping cycle with the brown below it. If you're a partner, you know what that means, what I'm referring to with all that. We had another pullback up here, right over here, guys. You see that right there. With the bearish divergence, tested the BBC, down close. Now, I didn't take this because the cycle portion was moving up, but it did have bearish divergence, and it did move down. Over here, if I were going to grade the trades, this one right here would have been an A-grade trade, and this one right here would have been an A-grade trade. You can see right here the cycle portion of the slingshot never turned red on the pullback, and the MA1 also never turned red on the pullback. You know, your bullish cross comes back down, tests the BBC, gives an up close. That's the opportunity to get long right in there. Okay. Let's see. The next one that I took was over here. Tested the BBC, gave a down close. I shorted that, took some profit down there. There was another one right here that I didn't take. The cycle portion was moving up. Another one over here that I didn't take. This again was an A-grade trade right here. Okay, because the MA1 up here was blue and never turned red on the pullback, and the cycle never turned red on the pullback. So that right there was a nice opportunity. Okay, over here the same thing. This was right at the end of the morning session. It ended up dropping from, the entry would have been here at 88.65. It only dropped 10 ticks, but that's, yeah, that's $100. $100 a contract. So that was an opportunity there. Then during the break, there was another one right here on the long side. You could have gotten in right there with the bullish divergence right there. Tested the BBC and an up close, brought it up. Another one right here on the way back down, dropped down there, and it dropped down there. And now it's gone kind of flat. While Dwayne was talking, it went kind of flat. We had a little bit of a drop here. We didn't really have any opportunities to take the trade, but it did... It did move down in there. All right, that was crude oil this morning. Now, let's cover the NQ next. The setups are the same exact thing here on the NQ. All right. Now, today, let's see. I took a couple of trades on the NQ. Let's see, we started out right in here. We had a bearish cross. Note, everyone, I want you to note that we have the same exact setups, the same exact indicator. Same thing. Everything is the same. It's just a different market. Right? You got a bearish cross. Price comes back up, tests the BBC, and moves down from there. You had bearish divergence down here, suggesting that everything was going to snap down. That was an A-grade trade right there as well. Okay? It just dropped down and kept moving. Over here, we had a pullback up to the BBC again, but the cycle portion of the slingshot was moving up a little bit here, so I didn't look to take that one. You can see it did end up moving down. Now, what we anticipate happening here, guys, is when you have this kind of divergence, the green line should move down into the cycle portion of the slingshot, like it did there and like it did there. And at that point, you know, you may get some carry through or some follow through in the trade, but usually you're going to get another opportunity and see the thing move back up and test the BBC again. Okay, that's usually what's going to happen. In this particular case over here, I stopped out on this one. It pulled back up, tested the BBC, and gave a down close. In this case, you see the cycle portion of the slingshot moved up to the green line instead of the other way around. So I ended up stopping out on that one. We had some bullish divergence in here, but I didn't take the trade because we had too many closes below the BBC. Then over here, you see the cycle portion move down again. It started to drop down, so there was more opportunity on the downside. We had a short opportunity there and there. And I actually took this one over here, okay? Now, when I took the trade, it was an A-grade trade, so I got into it, and I took, I think, 11 ticks out of it, something like that. I lost 8 ticks on this one, and I made 11 on this one. That put me to the plus 3 that I have. Okay. There was another opportunity right in here. You can see more divergence there. Tested the BBC with a down close. All right. Over here, when it did it, the cycle portion was moving up, so there wasn't any opportunity in there. All right. Now, right here, you had bullish divergence. All right. Tested the BBC with an up close with bullish divergence. I missed that one. And I missed that one. And what was I looking at in here? I'm not sure why I have... I think I was just going over the actual setups as they were happening in here. Right here, you had a bullish cross that tested the BBC with an up close, and you had some bullish divergence right there. So that was a nice opportunity to get long on the NQ. All right. Over here, it didn't actually pull all the way back up and test it. That would have been an A-grade trade had it done it, had it actually tested the BBC with the down close, because everything stayed red on that move down. You see? Same thing here. Everything stayed red. Right now, we have too many closes up above the BBC, so there are no trades happening right at the moment. Yeah, that's it. I'm going to leave it at that for the NQ. Those were the trades on the NQ this morning. Now, what I want you to take away from this is that we had the same exact trade setups over here on the crude, the same indicators, the same time frame, the same setups, the same everything, all right, on the crude and on the NQ. Okay, guys? On the YM, I didn't take any trades on the YM this morning, but there was one trade that set up right at the close this morning. And the way that I usually do this trade is it's on the 1500 contract YM chart. Now, we had dropped way down here like this, and we were saying during the whole morning session that we're anticipating a pullback up and test of the BBC. When it came back up and tested it, it went right through it. Now, usually what I would do in this case is when it goes through it, I'll put a sell stop in below the BBC so it could capture me on the way down. Because if the BBC is going to hold and the price is going to fail at the BBC, then I figured we would get down to the zone down below us. All right. I didn't do it this morning because it happened during the break period. But usually that's the way that I would play that. I would have put a sell stop in here at 586 or maybe even below the MA1 at 580. And you can see from 580 it's dropped almost 100 points. It dropped 96 points in a half an hour or so. That's the way that I typically play the YM trades, okay, on the 1500 contract. On the 4-tick range, I do it the same exact way that I do it on all the other 4-tick ranges, okay? Now, let's get to the ES. We'll do the two trades that I took this morning, all right? We had this one right here, right at the open. Price came down, tested the BBC. I got long. It gave me about 3-4 ticks profit. And then it turned around and stopped me out. Now, right after it stopped me out, it reversed. We had a bearish cross here, and it pulled back up to the BBC. But the BBC at this point was inside the weekly trading zone, so I didn't want to short right inside the zone like that. So I let that one go. You can see that one dropped 7 points. Then it pulled back again, gave me another opportunity over here. I did take this short when it pulled back again up here. I shorted there, and I took 2 points profit right over here. All right, I didn't short again when it pulled up over here. What I was looking at here, you see I drew these trend lines in here during the live trading room. I drew these trend lines in. I said when it breaks down below these trend lines, that's when the door is open for it to start moving down. It did break down below this trend line, and it started to move down. It moved about 4 or 5 ticks down, and then it pulled back up. On this pullback right here, I had drawn in another trend line. It needed to close up above that for it to really open up on the way up. And you can see it never did. It never even got close to it. It just dropped right through all the way back down. And I said, I expect that this trade is going to work its way down to the weekly trading zone. I was short up here. I think I was short 37.75, I think is where I was short. And I said, I expect that it's going to work its way down to 28. That's where the weekly trading zone is, and that's where it seems to be wanting to go. I also said, I don't think it's going to go straight down there. I said, we'll probably move down and maybe get another opportunity for an entry afterward. This was the first move. The other opportunity for an entry was right in here, if you wanted to. I didn't take that one. And I took the 2 points off the table right there, and you can see it's moved 11 points from the entry down there. that was the morning trading, guys. That was our morning in the live trading room. Not unlike any other morning. Most mornings are very similar. We're doing the same thing day after day, week after week, month after month. Same exact thing. Follow the plan. Plan the trade, trade the plan. All right. That's it, guys. I am going to wrap up the morning recap right here. If anybody has any questions, type them in. If you have any questions that you don't want me to answer in here, just email them to support@cfrn.net. That's support@cfrn.net. Okay. Let me just look through here and see. No. Okay. support@cfrn.net. All right, guys. If you have any questions, just email them to me. Keith and anybody else that... can I go over an ES trade? Yes, I can, Keith. All right. Let's go over an ES trade. Let's do this one right here. All right. Let me move these off. And what you're looking at on this particular trade right now, you're not paying attention to stuff down here, really. Okay? You're looking at the MA1 being below the BBC, and you're looking for price to pull back up to the BBC. When it pulls back up to the BBC right here, you know where the BBC is. It's going to have a little, like right now, I'll show you. If we scroll all the way to the right, you see right here, 13.29.21, that's where the BBC is. So right now, if we didn't have a weekly trading zone right below us, right now I would be looking to sell the BBC. Now, I don't exactly sell the BBC. I round it down to the nearest tick, because you can't sell 29.16, but you can sell 29 or you can sell 29 and a quarter. I round it down to the nearest tick, and then I put an MIT order on. So my order is market if touched. So right here, if I round it down to 13.29 even, and it hits 13.29 even, it's going to change my order into a limit order. I mean, into a market order. I'm sorry. And then it would put me in at the market. It would drop me in right at the ask, which would be 13.28.75. All right. I don't short into weekly trading zones. I have to have at least 2 points from my entry to the zone, so I wouldn't take this trade. But that's how you would do it. Now, over here, when price was pulling back up here, I had my order on here at 13.38. Okay, my order was just sitting there at 13.38. And on this bar, I believe it touched 13.38, and it entered me in at 13.37.75. All right, and then do you guys remember how I talked about that that gravestone doji right there and how that would be beneficial to the trade if the bar after it, when that bar was working, if it kept it in context by not getting any higher than right here where it was? If it would have gone up above 38.50, then this gravestone doji would have been out of context. But the fact that it closed right there, it kept that gravestone doji in context. So we were looking for it then. Yeah, that was a good sign. I said that in the live trading room this morning. I said that's a good sign for our trade. The gravestone doji is in context. We should see a move down to the swing low. And that down there is, well, pretty close to where I took profit. Right? I think I took profit one tick above it, right up here. That was it. Do you have any questions about it? Keith, I'm happy to answer any questions you have. And we're recording this, so you'll be able to watch this on the recaps once I finally post them to the website. Or get them out on YouTube. I do know that I'm a week behind in that. I usually do them at the end of the week. Okay. All right. Well, then I'm going to wrap up the recap right here. You see, right now you would be short on this if you were doing it, but I don't short into the weekly trading zones, so I'm not going to look to get short. But you see, it's hitting this trend line that I had drawn way back here. I drew that trend line in. Now, at the end of the morning session right here, guys, I drew that trend line. And you can see it's getting up above it right now, so I think it might get a good bounce here. This is also the lowest weekly trading zone of the week. There's probably a 9 in 10 chance that we're going to close well up above this, or at least go well above this at some point in the remainder of the week. Okay? I said that yesterday when we were down there, and it ran up 18 points from just about 18 points from the low of the day. Okay? When I said that yesterday, I think it ran up 18 points. Was it 18? Something like that. I don't know. Anyway, might be 10. but it ran up a bunch of points. All right. All right, guys, I'm going to stop the recording right here. There we go. Recording is off. All right, Dwayne.
All right.
I can hear
very
you.
Very good.
You're back in.
Yeah.
Good.
Why does it say you're muted, you're unmuted? Is that what it said?
No. I can hear a little bit of a hiss.
Yep. A little bit of a hiss. Oh, well.
A little bit. That's
all
okay.
All right, we're going to pause for station identification, and then we're going to go out to Las Vegas, Nevada, talk to Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com and our friend Robin Dane, the Traders Coach.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, David, and good morning, Robin.
Good morning, David and Robin.
Good morning.
All right, there's Robin.
Good morning, Michael. Is David there? Did we get him? Or is he in the shower, too?
Sounds like you're in the shower.
I don't know. I don't hear David, but I do hear you. Fine.
Oh, good. Well, at least Las Vegas is represented.
Yeah. Nope, somebody just turned the shower off, so that's good. Oh, then it went back on. It was off.
How are you guys
off
today?
Good.
I watched the market again 3:00 in the morning and saw that it was struggling, really, really trying to give us something good today. And I think at the time the S&P was down 1.5, so it was minor at the time. Whereas the night before it was down 15 points around 3:00 in the morning or so. So it was really trying to give us a better day.
Yeah, certainly. Well, you know, coming out of the gate this morning, it was sitting on top of the weekly trading zone right here. And I was thinking, you know, it may try to move up. I know there was a big move down in crude overnight. Mm-hmm. And then it made it all back up. So
yeah.
So it's it was kind of odd. I noticed last night there was one thing right here. I'll blow this up on. We saw my charts up, I think, but I'll blow it up here on the 1500 contract chart. This candle right here. I'll highlight it.
Uh huh. Yeah.
That one, right there. That one is It was kind of odd. It dropped, you know, it started here, went up about 10 points, dropped about 60, then went right back and closed exactly where it started. That's a very unusual looking candle.
Yeah, it sure is.
And, you know, I was, this morning when the crude, when we started in the live trading room this morning, I was trying to get a bigger picture look at the crude, and you can see it started up here, and it dropped all the way down to here. And then it recovered all the way back up to here in like an hour. So it made it almost all the way back. Well, it actually has made it all the way back now. 88.99, I think 88.88 is where it was, right? 88.97. And now it's made it all the way back up to 88.99. So it's in the bigger picture stuff. You know, the crude is, there's a lot of people selling it right up here at 88.90. It's like they don't want it to get up to $90 a share. Or 89 even. But a share. I mean, a contract. All right.
What have gas prices been doing in your area? Are you going up or going down? Because we keep vacillating back and forth here. One week it seems like it's going back up again, and then it drops and.
Yeah, they haven't been moving all that much.
Yeah,
really.
There's no consistent trend, really.
No, I mean, they were going up and up and up for a little while, and then we got up to just about $4 a gallon, and now we're back to about $3.69.
Huh.
So it depends where you are, though. You know, if you're, you know, down here, it's more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, closer to home, it's, you know, about 10 cents cheaper, $3.49, maybe 20 cents cheaper.
Well, I think FOMC is going to make a difference next week, too. They're all speculating now on how that's going to turn out in the summit meetings, too. So I think everybody just still in a wait mode.
Yep.
Yeah, we're in the wait for David mode. David, are you there?
Yeah.
That's kind of unlike him. He might have had some kind of...
I'm going to have to leave.
Wait, I'm right here.
Oh, there you are.
Oh, there you go.
How are you, sir?
I'm good, and you?
I'm doing well. Sorry about that. We're in the middle of something here.
Were you? What was it?
Oh, well, just getting our laundry done. No, I'm just joking.
Yes, Martinizing, right?
1 hour Martinizing.
Yes.
Okay.
So how are you doing?
Well, we're doing all right. Watching the market drop and now trying to recover. And that's about it. Germany downgraded. Finland minding their own business, keeping a low profile. The only Euro nation that has not been downgraded or picked on by Moody's and the other credit rating agencies.
So you're saying Germany was downgraded?
Yes, by Moody's.
Oh,
they were.
Okay.
To negative.
And what's their rating now?
Negative.
I'm sorry, what was that, Dwayne?
Negative.
Oh, just negative.
Negative.
Okay.
Negative.
That's interesting. Wonder when our next downgrade or upgrade is going to come. What's our rating? Do we know what it is right now?
Yeah, we're, what are we, AA now, I think?
We were downgraded from AAA+ to AAA, I think, or something like that. I'm pretty sure. I don't know, though. I don't know. It could be AA. I don't know.
Okay. Well, that is very interesting. And are we attributing, is that what the news is attributing to the market here?
Well, this actually happened yesterday afternoon after the markets closed. So it's a bit of a delayed reaction, if that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that it's being... Moody's changed the outlook on the AAA credit ratings for Germany. Now, that's one big A and two small A's, so it gets a little confusing.
Yeah.
Moody's changed the outlook rating for Germany, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg to negative yesterday, citing an increasing likelihood of collective support for countries such as Spain and Italy.
Got it.
So that's the deal.
Mm.
Negative.
Well, we're seeing just little cracks, you know, continued cracks in the armor all around the world. Germany, I'm a little surprised because Germany was one of the countries that I think was going to participate in part of the bailout.
Well, Angela Merkel is very upset by this turn of events, and she said Germany will remain Europe's haven during the financial crisis, pushing back against Moody's Investor Services decision to lower the outlook on the country's top credit rating.
Mm-hmm.
The risks in the Eurozone are not new, and Germany remains in a very sound economic and financial situation, the German Finance Ministry said. In counterpoint to Moody's, it cited the verdict of financial markets that have rewarded Germany with record low borrowing cost. Germany will, through solid economic and financial policy, defend its safe haven status and continue to responsibly maintain its anchor role in the Eurozone. So they're not buying it. The German guys, they're not buying it. So it left Finland as the only country in the 17-nation Euro region with a stable outlook for its top ranking.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting. Like I say, that's another crack in the armor on the European front, because Germany, you know, they're not in terrible shape. They're certainly not in shape like Greece or Spain. And I don't know where Greece or Spain are right now, but, you know, they have a full decade or more in unwinding and fixing their financial issues, obviously, because so much is going to have to be done just to get back to even before rebuilding things again. And hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later. But these kinds of things can take a long time. I mean, even here in America, where we have, you know, we're the land of the free, and we've got, at one point, if not now, we were the biggest economic force on the planet. And, you know, we're in a pretty good little pullback ourselves. We're now going into our 42nd or 43rd or whatever it is month of, you know, 8%+ unemployment. And we really know that that figure is more like 14% when you add in the people who are no longer working or looking for work. You know, that's just counting people that are on the rolls, you know, the 380,000 people who sign up each week or month or whatever for unemployment benefits, which, you know, continues to be a big draw on our tax structure and, you know, the money that comes from the government. Now, that's necessary, obviously, for some period of time, but, you know, if you've seen the news, the food stamp program is, you know, kicking into gear. I mean, we're just turning it all up. Everything is just getting turned up. All the entitlement programs are getting turned up, and people probably need them because there's a lot of people out of work. And we talked about that on TV about the food stamp thing, and boy, you look fantastic. Yeah, I'm on food stamps, you know, turning it into more and more a glamour thing or whatever. But something's going to have to happen here where we turn this around and get off of just paying people to not work and getting back to being America and innovating and, you know, giving people the green light. We have not gotten the green light. That's for sure. Business owners do not have a bright green light that says, go ahead. You know, there's always going to be the need for regulation. There's no doubt about it. But the majority of people aren't trying to screw other people. The regulation is for the people who want to get away with something and will always need that regulation at some level. But the majority of people, unless you believe that everybody is just bad at their core, want to run a legitimate business. They want to employ people. They want to be able to pay their employees and make a reasonable profit for the risk of going into business. And they don't have the green light under this administration, clearly. I mean, they've made it, there's been polls, and there's, you know, they've done all that. And business owners are frightened by this administration because they just never know what next is going to come up and whether, you know, the sentiment, no matter how you want to take a look, even at what the president recently said about, you know, you didn't really make that success on your own, no matter how he wants to couch it, the spirit of what he says has been heard before, the tone, the negativity behind it, the slap in the face that it is. It wasn't a positive statement. It was a disenfranchising, to use the left, statement. It was negative, and we feel it. The business owners feel it. You feel it. I feel it. Other business owners feel it. And so there isn't a green light, and we need somebody that knows how to find the green light bulb. We need somebody that knows how to screw it into the socket and somebody knows how to turn on the switch so that we can all see the green light, because God only knows what's going to come out of this administration the second round where it doesn't matter anymore. They don't have to worry about a re-election. You really get to know who you're dealing with in that second term. And like I said the other day, when he came out with that statement about small businesses really not responsible for their own success because of roads and bridges and that sort of thing, it shows such a complete, utter, astonishing lack of comprehension about what business is and how it, what it takes to get there and all that stuff. We're only going to see more of that in the second time around, second round. So.
Well, but now we know what he really meant. So, you know, that kind
now
of
we do know
things.
What he really meant. And even if you, like I said, even if you take the words and you put them together, there's a tone and there's a, it's not positive. It's not a positive thing. It's not like saying, hey, we all have, you know, someone to thank in our lives for where we are. Like we have our mother as an example, right? That helped us, you know, why are men ordinarily, you know, normal man, it feels very warm feelings towards their mother because, you know, the mother did, they know how many millions of man hours were spent in keeping them safe and feeding them and raising them and putting them in the baseball, putting them in the karate, you know, the grades, the whole thing, all the way up. So, yeah, everyone has things to be thankful for. But this statement is coming from somebody who really believes that small government is bad, medium government is better, huge government is best, and a never-ending spending and taxing. And along with all that is this negative connotation that he's expressed probably 20 times now in his 3.5 years towards business. I mean, he's never said a friendly thing that I know about towards business, except when he's standing in front of a place where he spent our tax dollars saying they're going to employ this many people and, you know, let's give a warm welcome to the owner and all that stuff. I've never seen him say something warm and encouraging towards businesses. Maybe somebody can find me a clip on YouTube somewhere. I haven't seen it. And when he does say that, I wonder if it's going to be in some other context. But left to his own resources, he does not appear to be giving a green light to anybody. And businesses have been polled, and they don't feel it. They feel, you know, frightened by what – they don't want to put money out on the table to turn around to find out this guy – you know, needs us to pay or him, the businessman, to pay more or their fair share. Even the healthcare thing, you know, is a very scary thing for businesses because it's going, you know, yes, anybody can get up and say, isn't it wonderful? Here's what we want. We want everybody to be covered. We want no one to ever die. We want people to have pre-existing conditions. That's great. Those are great and laudable goals. How you're going to get there, you know, the devil's in the details. And obviously, you know, this has scared a lot of businesses as well, just that alone. So we got a lot of stuff to work through. I would like to see, to be honest with you, I'd like to see Mitt Romney, if I can just say this, I'd like to see him now. He's done a lot of complaining about the president. I'd like to see him come up and lay out a very easy to understand comprehensive plan of what he is going to do. It's time for him to do that. We're about to be in August. The election is in November. I don't know what his plan is. I don't have the foggiest idea right now of what Mitt Romney plans on doing to solve the problems. Do I think he's capable? I think he's way more capable. But I don't know his plan. And if I'm feeling that, then I'm thinking other people are feeling it as well. We can all criticize, you know, President Obama. He's an easy target right now. Because his record is just abysmal. But what is the new guy going to do? What exactly is Mitt Romney going to do with this mess, with this economy? I certainly don't think he's going to, on day one, start a campaign of saying it was his predecessor that got us into this trouble. Because leadership doesn't do that. We have a guy in office that's still doing that to this day. But I don't know what his plan is, on the other hand. I'd love to know. How are you going to solve? I know you're going to undo the healthcare thing. I got that. What are you going to do about the small business problem? What are you going to do about the business problem, the employment problem? And as far as I know, I don't know what his plan is. Do you know what his plan is? Is there something that I've missed somewhere?
David, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. So I'm hoping that he comes up with that because I think the American public, you know, has probably had enough of the back and forth about, you know, the record and his record and Bain and, you know, all this stuff. What's your plan? Let's say we put you into office. How are you going to handle this? What are you going to do? Lay it out on the table. Because one of my big complaints about Obama originally was that we just didn't really understand what he was all about. Charisma, he's got plenty. And that got him through. Good energy, nice stuff going on, all that stuff. He seemed like he was in control, great orator, all that stuff. We now know that's about all he had. And at this point, we also know that he has a lot of strange, not strange, but, you know, powerful emotions that he's expressing or wants to express in the form of legislation against people and groups that he has these feelings against. And unfortunately for those people that he feels that way for, it doesn't make them feel warm and fuzzy. And they're getting it. They understand that he's not happy about them or their group or whatever it is for whatever reason. So if this guy, if Mitt Romney gets into office, we know that's going to be better, but we still don't know what his plan is. So maybe we can, you know, somebody I hope is going to tell him at some point here, you got to lay out your plan. Somebody has to know what you're going to do. We're going to give you the keys to the government. What are you going to do with it? So as far as I'm concerned, just about anybody needs, you know, different needs to be in there, because we know what we're going to get. We're going to get another 4 years of this. But at the same time, it would be very helpful for Mitt Romney's election chances if the American public could understand his plan. So there's my bit. How are you doing?
Doing good. Doing good.
Okay. Okay, well, do you want to get on to the S&P and let's take a look at where what we've got going here?
Sure.
By the way, good morning, Robin. I didn't say good morning to you earlier. Apologize for that.
Robin stepped out.
Oh,
she had another thing to take care of.
Oh, well.
She'll be back.
Just let it be known that I said good morning.
All right.
Wayne, what were you going to say? And then we'll get on.
Oh, I was going to talk to Don. Don, I answered your question yesterday, but I'm going to send you a message right now and answer it again. Maybe you had left yesterday when I answered it, so there you go. Okay.
Yeah, I sent it to him, too.
Jerry wants to know, Dwayne, we are at your lowest weekly zones on the ES and the YM. Do you anticipate them holding now for the rest of the week? Well, I'll tell you what. We still have 3 trading days left, Jerry, and so the potential for us to dip a little lower certainly exists. But by close of business on Friday, I do expect the market to be trading above 1327/28. Now, on a historical percentage type basis, that's just what will happen. Could this be one of the outlying weeks where something different comes to pass? Yeah, it could be. But for now, and as you can see, once we hit that 27.28, we've got a pretty good bounce. We bounced it up to, what did we get up to so far? 31.25.
Yep,
but
31.25.
We may not be done. I mean, this whole business with Germany, I'm really surprised that it didn't have a greater effect on the market than what we've seen so far. I mean, the response...
Well, we're down 14 points. That's not a bad down day.
Yeah, but when you whack out an entire country...
Country, yeah.
You know, which is supposed to be like the safe haven of the whole Eurozone. I mean, the whole Eurozone's looking to Germany to save them. Greece,
for direction, yeah.
Italy, Spain. Come to find out, Finland's the one with the deep pockets. Who knew?
Yeah.
Or maybe they don't have deep pockets. Maybe they just know how to budget. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
They didn't. Maybe Finland simply didn't spend more than they made.
That's right. There you are. There you are.
So that's the best answer I can give you, Jerry. I know that you got short. You had said this morning at 40 off of that tweet. So if you wrote it down to 28, that was a nice trade. That was good for 12 points.
It's a big trade.
Big trade. Really big trade. Okay, David, Connie wants to know, when is the next top or bottom for the month in the S&P?
Well, let's go into the S&P a little bit. I'm sorry. Go ahead. First of all, let me say a few things about the S&P because there's a few key things that are happening here. We can go back to the bigger picture, but I do want to mention that yesterday, although we didn't put this out as a roadmap, we did forecast, we did put it out on our Messenger Pro product at about 3 o'clock Chicago time that about an hour and 15 minutes before the close that the market would continue to decline and touch 1326 today. And so we have gone down today, and the actual low is 1326. This could have been a roadmap probably, but it didn't really appear obvious to us until that point. And today's decline to that level obviously completes that. But the trend is still down. And as I mentioned originally, when we talked about the July 19th forecast top, that because that was a daily top, reflected wave, inside and subsequent to a July 2nd weekly top, that the decline off of this could be very powerful. And I don't think the decline is yet over. I think it's close, but it does have the real possibility of deeper decline. So your point about not having enough movement yet is well taken on today's session, but it may well not be over yet. Mm-hmm. I would be careful on the long side until we see a little bit more evidence that the move is over. Anytime you have the daily inside the weekly like that, it just is very much like what we talked about before it happened. This is the kind of move, what we call a Mona Lisa in reflected wave, and this kind of move would be expected. So in general, I think the market's going to be heavy here into today and into tomorrow possibly as well, so to finalize this move down. So having said that, there's a couple of bigger time frames that are still important when we talk about turning points for the S&P. Number one, and the most important, not for trading purposes, but just for purposes of putting together the whole view of the market, is the March top for 2012. The market, after having completed that, has declined. And as we've talked about a number of times on the program, we believed that the advance that we're in that had brought us up to the July 19th top, that although we were advancing, that there was still a vulnerability to the market on the downside. That would mean not just for a decline like the last 3 days, but for a decline that potentially would test or even break, believe it or not, the 1262 level. Now, that's not an outright forecast, but we know that the vulnerability is there. And so we're being careful not to do a lot of puts, selling a lot of puts on stocks right now. We're going to wait a little bit. And you know what? We may wait, and we may miss a great trade on the long side, but we know what the vulnerability looks like, and I want to wait a little longer. I certainly, like I said, before July 19th, I want to see how they handle the July 19th top and decline, because this would be their chance. This is the chance for the market to show whether that vulnerability is there. And so although we've had a pretty good decline, it's not horrific yet. It's nothing triple huge, but the door is still open for that, and so I'm cautious. I do like the idea, like we've talked about since the 19th, of selling rallies in this decline. Your trade today, or whoever the fellow was that had the short from 40 and on, those are the types of trades I'm talking about, just where the market hits an important level, it rallies into that, and you sell short. Maybe you have to sit through a little bit, but the odds favor continued decline. And until we get past tomorrow, because we have several markets that have a February 24th turning point, the S&P is not one of them. But the fact is, until we get into tomorrow, which is the one day late for these other markets, I think there's still caution on the S&P, and I like the idea of selling short. So that's about really all I want to say right now about the S&P, is that, you know, we're in the decline. This is what we were looking for, a multi-day decline off of July 19th and a further and possibly a wide open break. This has not been a wide open break yet, but that's remains possible here. So I would use caution, and we are using caution in our own trading here. Going back one other step here, the reflected wave weekly top of July 2nd. This is now the third week since that top. So we're at a point right now also with that weekly top where, yes, they've expressed themselves to the downside. We've had 3 weeks of sideways to lower, obviously. The top on July 2nd, the week of July 2nd, was made at 1375. We've gone down to 1319. But, you know, there's a lot of forces at work here, and I want to let them, at least on the daily chart into tomorrow, I want to let them show their hand and see how the market, I mean, for Dwayne, for what you said, maybe the market hasn't fully digested the, in terms of news, the meaning and the scope of what happened in Germany, you know, the downgrade. We certainly are down on the day, but maybe there's more to it than that. We'll
yeah.
see.
Yeah, well, you know, when the U.S. got downgraded, it didn't weaken. As I recall, when Moody's downgraded us, we might have stumbled for a day or two, but then we continued mm-hmm. higher.
Well, you know, for the last 2 years, the new good news is bad news for our market.
Yeah.
I mean, we've really just rallied into all kinds of incredible bad news. It's had a lot of people scratching their heads because the market has, you know, quote unquote, shrugged off enormous bad news. And then suddenly on a day where there is a little bad news, the newscasters still don't know what to do with it. So they say, well, the market's down on, you know, somebody fell over on their roller skates and the market's down on that. They still don't really get that the market's just been avoiding, or they've converted bad news into good news, if you want to think of it in those terms. The market has rallied on tremendously. I would like to say that probably in the last 4 years, we've had more concentrated bad news than probably in any four-year period going back maybe 30 or 40 years. We've really had a string of bad news like I've not seen in my whole lifetime. With regard to every possible situation, the terrorist front, the financial front, the political front, the financial world front, it's just been one thing after another through the last 3 years, whatever you want to call it. It's just been one thing after another, and the market has done very well. We did have the big decline, of course, down to the, what's it called, the 666, what do people call that? Is that the apocalypse low, or what's the phrase in the Bible for 666? The Antichrist low.
The mark of the beast.
The mark of the beast. Bottom. And there was a lot of things on the internet at that point when that bottom was in. A lot of people thought, ooh, there's the sign right there. Now, you know, we're also coming up on the big Mayan calendar date. We're inching in towards December 23rd, 2012. Many years ago, I spent quite a bit of time studying the Mayan calendar, and I was raised around a lot of artwork. My parents had a lot of pre-Columbian art that my mother collected, just not even expensive stuff. She just had a thing for pre-Columbian art. And so I found my eyes, just without even trying, drifting to the artwork of the Mayans. And in that, I did make a discovery, which is something I've mentioned on the program before, called what I call a Mayan time fractal. And it's displayed, and I've discovered the idea of it, whether it's intentional or not, in their artwork. The way that they did certain things, laid things out, was repeated over and over again, and that became a basis for later work of mine. Well, having said all that, we know we're coming into, on top of all the other things, the renewal of all life, which the Mayan calendar suggests would begin on December 23rd, 2012. So, one heck of a year, 2012, we've had. And renewal of all life could be, everyone looks at it as a bad thing, it could be a very good thing that happens then. The cycle doesn't always mean we have to crash and destruct. It seems like we're doing that now, but it could be a very good thing, and it may not, and I'm sort of saying, I'm not saying this is a forecast, but I don't believe it's going to be an event on that day. I actually don't think there's going to be anything unusual other than the normal unusual things that might happen on any day or on that week, for that matter. I believe that if that cycle really does represent something powerful, shifting in the later-to-be-viewed history of the world, it's going to be viewable later as a boat turning around slowly rather than a big cataclysmic event of some kind.
There's your cartoon on the screen.
Hold on, let me take a look. Only enough room to go up to 2012. That'll freak somebody else. That's really funny. That is really funny. Well, they'll be saying that after 2012. Now, for those of you, maybe you don't know this, but the Mayans were not fooling around. They had priests that were essentially time priests, and they would track time. They would, and now you'd say, well, what does that mean, track time? That really means track motion. Time is meaningless without motion. It means nothing unless something moves.
That was what they did in their spare time in between cannibalizing each other, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
They were a society that had very lofty aspirations and were very carnivorous at the same time, or cannibal type. And these priests were tracking the movement of planets, which, of course, represents the movement of time. And they got so advanced that they could tell you where a particular planet would be in the sky. They didn't name it Saturn or whatever. They had their own names back then. But they knew where it would appear in our sky on a given date, which is an enormously complicated thing to do because our Earth is spinning on its axis. It's also rotating around the sun, so you got two levels of motion going. And then you have other planets which are spinning on their axis, and they're also moving around the sun.
And
so
you have all these people on Earth doing Zumba and Tai Bo. And,
that counts for something right there for sure. You get too much of that, and you won't be able to do any math. Those people become, you know, zombies after a while. But in order to know where that's funny, Dwayne. In order to know where a planet would appear in the sky of an object like the Earth as it's rotating on its axis and around the sun is an enormously complex calculation, which they figured out by watching the sky for a long, long time. And when one priest would die, another one would take over, of course, from his work and carry it on. And so this was a very interesting and sophisticated society, pretty much like no other, because they really did find something interesting about time. And these big cycles, they're called Bakhtuns, B-H-A-K-T-U-N-S. Those cycles are what this one's based off of, this 5,280-year, whatever it is, cycle that ends on December 23rd, 2012. So they didn't just run out of space. This cycle is one of, it's funny in the cartoon,
One of their big cycles. December 21st, isn't that the date, December 21st?
Maybe it's the 21st. I don't have my calendar in front of me. I can't remember if it's the 21st or the 23rd, but it's right at basically Christmas time, 2012, right in that, you know, 3 or 4 day period. So they didn't run out of space. This is one of their big cycles. It's referred to in their work, going forward and back. And it counts out and ends on that date. So, that's another big thing coming up here, and we're inching in on it. So we'll see how that all plays out.
Mysteriously, they disappeared.
They did disappear. There's a lot of, I know the aliens came down and took them.
Smote them. I think that's what happened.
What's that?
I think God smote them.
Oh, okay. That could be it too. Or the Spanish just appeared and they could have just kicked their butts, basically. And somehow the society might have been crumbling already and the Spaniards came, and if you know your history at all.
If they were massacred, though, there should have been like some bones. You know, mass graves or whatever. I mean, they literally just kind of disappeared.
They kind of did. That's a long-standing thing, but there is evidence of plenty of that there. It's just that an entire civilization apparently disappeared, and there are some questions of that. I wouldn't jump right to alien spaceships, which people tend to do with the Mayans, that they were, you know, taken up and all that. Perhaps they were. I doubt it. But, you know, something did happen, and their society went away. There still are plenty of Mayans on the Earth today. There's ancestors from that civilization. And, when civilizations collapse, they tend to go quickly. I mean, you can take a look at Rome and almost make the same statement. You know, when they fell, it collapsed, and it just broke apart into 1,001 pieces. Now, yes, there's all kinds of evidence, and we still have Mayan temples and all kinds of things like that there. But when civilizations collapse, it's big, fat, and ugly. And it doesn't, you know, it's like a market decline. It doesn't take that long. They go down faster than they go up. So any number of things could have happened. But one of the things we do know is that the Spaniards had come at that time around that time and had essentially invaded. And so it depends on which history book you read about what happened there that, you know, we just really don't know. Maybe when we have time machines, we can go back and figure it all out. But it is a known fact that their society went away real quick. And so it'll be, you know, someday maybe we'll know how that happened. So there you are. It'll be interesting. You know, we're coming up on August here. It'll be very interesting to see how this plays out. The bigger the cycle, generally, the less precise it's going to be, even if the cycle's to the day. So in this particular case, it is to the day. But events and things like that tend to... That's why I say that it may be something that is obvious upon retrospect. Just like right now, if we look back on the 1970s, we can see very clearly the turns that occurred that would be very difficult to possibly see at the time because it's a slow shift, etc. This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. You know, when the big ages change, the age of Aquarius, it doesn't, big changes don't happen on that day, but on retrospect, often it's very easy to see. And I'm thinking that's how this is going to play out. At least it's a possibility to consider. So, there's my take on it, Dwayne.
We'll allow you that.
All right. Thank you.
Where do you want to go?
I think there's any, let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anything else on the S&P. We pretty much made our, I think we've had our piece on the S&P. We are still thinking it's in a decline. The 26 is important, obviously. They've completed that. But there's a likelihood that this could still be a much bigger decline than what we're seeing now. So, yeah, let's move over to gold. Let's take a look. Nothing huge is happening in gold here. We're still doing very much a sideways motion here. I mentioned a couple weeks back, I think, that the week of July 16th was going to be an important week, and we're now at the week of July 23rd. We're still inside a very narrow range, so we're not going to do anything with this now, but I'm glad to see that this week broke to new recent lows. And that helps. So I don't have a lot more to add than that because we're in a very, very narrow, compressed range here. There are some things we could say, and so there are some trades we could take off of this. Certainly, I think you guys might even take. I don't know if you trade in gold or not in your morning thing or not, Dwayne. But
for the most part, no.
Okay. But there are some trades here that can be taken. Now, having said all that, the U.S. Treasury bond market, in response to the S&P going down, again, another big day up. We have broken to new recent highs in the U.S. Treasury bond market. I think 30-year money is probably getting, if it's not already there, 30-year, like mortgages, that sort of thing, if we're not already there, I think we're inching in on the average person being able to walk in and get 3.5% on a loan. So if you're a person who has a 7% loan on your house or 6.5%, you could cut that in half, which would dramatically alter your monthly payments. Even if you're not planning on retaining your home or you don't know what you're going to do with it because values have changed and gone down, it certainly makes your payment a lot less expensive while you're figuring out what you're going to do. Something for you to consider. It's historic. So we're just... maybe a tick. We're right at the old highs here. So this is a really powerful push that this market has made up. Interest rates go down when the U.S. Treasury bond market goes up. But beware, and I'd be careful, even though the LIBOR thing has been busted, you know, the big thing with the people, the price fixing of the way that the trading took place, and then on the close they would fix the LIBOR rate to accommodate themselves, the bankers. The fact that that's been busted doesn't mean that it just turns right around and continues on. It doesn't mean, you know, I'd be very careful, in other words, doing anything with an adjustable rate mortgage that is based on the LIBOR rate. Don't think that would be a good idea. It wasn't a good idea then. I don't think it's a good idea now. It's just, there's too much heat around that, and I think you'd be wise to stay away from that. You're better off, if I can make my suggestion, just with the plain old 30-year mortgage. You know, ask your doctor or pharmacist, but, you know, stay away from anything that's based on the LIBOR rate, like adjustable mortgages are.
No, it said yesterday that in the United States, we were the closest to, well, the headline yesterday said U.S. LIBOR arrests imminent. Prosecutors in Washington, D.C. are understood to be furthest advanced toward making arrests. In the U.K., the Serious Fraud Office has said, hang on, what did they say?
Is that what it's called, the Serious Fraud Office?
Honest to goodness, it really is. Yep. It even has its own Wikipedia page. Has said it will investigate the alleged manipulation of LIBOR and other interest rate benchmarks, but has yet to make decision over whether there is enough evidence to prosecute. Okay, so the U.S. prosecutors prosecutors in Washington, D.C. are, this was yesterday, going to make arrests imminently. But in today's news, I don't see where any arrests have been made. So now, let me see. There's one last article that came out 3 hours ago. Prosecutors in the U.S. and Europe are close to arresting a number of traders over the scandal. Indeed, some of the suspects' lawyers have already been notified of impending arrest. Well, that's a polite thing to do, to call a man's attorney and say, "Hey, we're going to arrest you."
It's very common, actually. That's quite even in America. That's very common.
Is it really?
Yes, it is. It is. If you have a guy that is being investigated, the U.S. Attorney's Office will call your attorney and say, "We're, you know, it's likely we're going to come get your guy. Let him know."
The arrests could take pressure off the banks, making the rate fixing look more like individual malfeasance than systematic corporate wrongdoing. Meanwhile, Bloomberg reports that regulators from Switzerland to South Korea to Japan are looking into the possibility that their rates might be vulnerable to foul play. So, yeah, no arrest yet, but they, you know, they're still threatening. So,
yeah, we'll see how that plays out. The, you know, any of these things, you know, people do complain about regulation, but obviously some kind of regulation is needed in something like this. The way that this was played out is that 16 or so banks made a call on what they think they're going to have to pay to borrow money from other banks. And those numbers get used for some reason. I don't know why those numbers are used in that way, why the free trading market doesn't determine it. But this is the way they set the thing up, and if it was done in good intentions, I don't really understand it. And I don't understand the LIBOR even halfway about how it connects with things. But for some reason, it's a number that is not itself apparently freely traded, because they needed a bunch of banks to get together and call out, so to speak, what they felt they were going to pay for borrowing money, and that number gets averaged, and that becomes the LIBOR rate, something like that. And then that becomes a benchmark against things that are tradable to trade against. And so that whole business of that happening would have to be regulated. But, you know, like so many things that we've seen in recent years, it doesn't even matter if there's regulation there. People get in and do what they're going to do anyway. And it's interesting that they have not arrested anybody, and it also already shows a crack in the armor to me that there might be a few people they arrest, but that the business that we talked about the other day, that this could be the largest lawsuit, you know, on the planet, might end up turning out to be one of the smallest. Because if they don't, are not able to prove that this was something systemic, that the banks were doing this knowingly in order to profit, then it turns out to be something against one or two individuals, three or four individuals, and the whole case just crumbles. Those guys are in whatever trouble they're in, but it's not something where everybody gets to go to the bank and sue for their credit card debt and for their, you know, or their interest rates and all the things that these numbers represent and people could claim damages against. So this may actually turn out to be a very, very big flame out so to speak, if they don't get any of the big guys.
Supposedly, the Wall Street Journal released a list of names this morning of people they thought would be arrested, but I'm not able to access that list because I don't subscribe to the journal.
Okay. Well, okay, we'll see in a few days here, whatever they're able to pull off. Crude oil, let's switch over to that. Don't have a lot on that except that I've mentioned before that the month of August, which we're inching in on, is going to be very important for this market. And the fact that we've moved up off the bottom that was made last month strongly is very important as well. How the month closes, the month that we're in right now, the month of July closes, is going to be important to us. We're trading right now at about $88. A close above 85 would be a stronger position short term. So keep that in mind with regard to the crude oil. And then August will be the next important month that we may be able to issue a roadmap on for important movement in this market. So we'll wait and see how that plays out. And then leading into that, we have the first week in August also is going to be important. So August has a number of things sort of lying one on top of another, the month of August and also the first week in August. We'll talk about that as we get a little bit closer to it. Okay, so let's move on. I know you guys don't trade it, and I know you're tired of me talking about it, but the stock Tesla today continues its decline along with the overall market, and they've broke below some important levels here, and we talked about yesterday the importance of July 24th for this market as a bottom. So this will be interesting to watch. This may end up putting us into a position to buy the market, and we'll talk about that as we get a little bit further into the week. Let's see if there's anything else there. I think that's it for the basic markets that we're covering here, Duane. I don't know if there's anything else that we have that's of big importance. We talked about, of course, the week, oh no, we didn't talk about that. I'll leave that off because we didn't actually talk to you about it. Something we talked about, but we didn't talk to you about it, so I'll leave that off the table. Anything else, Duane, of interest in the markets here that you want to take a look at? Or
Here's Facebook today. It's trading at 28 and change.
Now, Facebook, we talked about Facebook many, many times. It seems as though Facebook is really not in the news very much anymore with regard to the stock and all the things that surrounded it. It doesn't trade real aggressively. It's a pretty quiet trading market.
What sort of volume does it have? 5.5 million today.
I'm sorry?
6.5 million today.
Okay. Well,
so yeah, from the lows, I mean, it made a pretty decent recovery back up to 33, and now it's been in this little range here now for 3, 4, 5, 6 days. So
yeah.
The next break back below 27 could take us back to the lows. Yeah, it's not in the news every day anymore. People got tired of talking about it. Actually, they're too busy on Facebook to talk about Facebook. So,
Yeah, exactly. It's such a popular product, they don't have time to talk about the stock.
Young Mr. Zuckerberg is no longer one of the top 40 wealthiest people in the world. Because of the decline in the stock price. He was there briefly. He was in the top 40. So that's pretty good for a young man under 30. Isn't he under 30?
I think he is.
Yeah. So, let's see. A couple questions. Ed wants to know if you have any levels lower than 25, 26 on the ES.
Well, let me take a look, because I think our lowest level for today is we had forecast the 26, or yesterday we mentioned that the market is very likely to go down and test 26 today. They've done that. The support panel actually shows 27/25, and there are no lower levels than that today. However, having said that, and having reached for us 26, which we think is important because it had to do with a roadmap type of setup, the fact is normally you'd see a bounce off that. We actually do expect lower prices, and the first level below us right now that we think would be important both as a target and as a tradable, a trade to and trade off of level would probably be, even though it's not in the panel today, not that far off at 22. So that's where we think the next important level would be on the downside. Again, that's not in our panel because normally, and again, we put quotes around normal, but normally the market would have trouble getting below the 26/25 target on the downside. So if they do, there's a level close by, which would be the 22 level, and so that would be the next one of importance. On a bigger picture, because that would be for trading, just if somebody's trading off of a 15-minute chart, you know, it's sort of what, you know, we all do, intraday trading, that kind of thing. That's a nearby level. A more important level would be to trade down to perhaps 13.15, those levels that have been seen before, but are, you know, would be more important for longer term for the market to decline. So that's two levels of importance that I think would be coming into play. That's just off the cuff here. It's not something that I've worked out from every possible way, but those are two levels that I think would be important.
Anything on corn, soybeans?
No, not a whole lot. I don't have a lot to add to that today. Haven't in a little while. Let's take a quick look at soybeans, though, and I want to just see if there's anything. I know we have the weekly. We do have a lot of stuff coming into the 24th and 25th and the decline on soybeans. Now, we're talking now for August, and I don't know if we're still in August. Can somebody clarify for me if we are?
What month are we in, Bert?
November? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's change that over. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that, Bert.
From Daniel's Trading?
Bert Schlichter's from Daniel's Trading. That's his whole name. It's not that he's Bert Schlichter from Daniel's Trading. He is Bert Schlichter from Daniel's Trading. That's his whole name. So if
the
you ever
third.
Call up and ask for him, you would say, "Hi, is Bert Schlichter from Daniel's Trading there?" And they would say, "Yes, please hold." And then when you're on hold, they would say, "I got a real live one online for you here, Bert." Something like that.
So, Bert, what's the word? This is a daily chart. What's the word for the big sell-off here?
Rain. We're getting some rain, cooler temperatures. So that's what's really weighing on the grain market right now. There's some stories and farmers that I talk to on a daily basis says, you know, especially for corn, it's not going to really help that much. But it's all weather-driven right now.
What's the symbol, current symbol for corn?
I'm sorry?
Current symbol for corn?
I would use December. So ZCZ2.
I do want to mention, Bert, just from our perspective, that the soybean market, now that I have the right dates up here, the breakout above, we had a monthly top in April of this year, and the breakout here on the upside obviously has a larger force behind it because they are able to get that. That means that the next quarterly top for the soybean market would be due in the final quarter of this year. So October, November, December, that's the on-time month for a quarter. Now, just for purposes of keeping an eye on this, $16.63, if we close this quarter, the current quarter, the third quarter, below 1663, that's already an early sign that the larger quarterly top would be in. So we are looking for the on-time quarter to be the last quarter of this year. Okay?
And that would be for November?
That's
pricing.
That's in November. This is using November pricing. Last quarter of this year is the on-time quarter. Now, these are very, very large time frames, but they can be traded because you can go down to smaller time frames and work within the larger. Exactly the same thing that we just did on the S&P. July 2nd weekly top sold off to a reflected wave daily bottom on July 12th. That bottom advanced to the next reflected wave top on July 19th. That top tested the July 2nd weekly top, daily top testing the weekly top, and then you get a powerful reversal like we suggested. That's what you would do with this market. So you have a quarterly top coming in on the on-time bar for the last quarter of this year, big time frame. We can go to smaller time frames, anyone with reflected wave can, and go find the top within the top and stack them together and be able to put a trade together that literally you could be in if you were of such a mindset for a year or more, because this time frame would take a long time to express itself. So keep that in mind. We can talk about that, but that's what I'm saying. This market is so big, it's playing out such big cycles that it's really more acclimated towards much longer term trading. That's where the real money is to be made. And you can make short-term money in it as well. There's nothing wrong with day trading it, etc. But you have to be cognizant of what is happening on the bigger time frames. So,
okay.
I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, it's right around harvest, which is...
Okay.
Robin had a question on gold. You mentioned a long move on deck for gold. Could you...
Is Robin our Robin, or is that another details? Robin?
Actually, Robin, by the way... who's been very quiet, she is here, but this was actually one of your... Robin B.
Yes, I know. Hi, Robin.
Been around forever.
Well,
no, she has.
Got Robin
That's
D
wonderful.
And Robin B.
Hey.
You're awfully quiet there, Robin.
I didn't know I was back on there.
Well, pull
it
your
was
mic
muted
up.
For a while.
Pull your mic up. Yeah.
I'm up.
All right.
Okay.
But it was
Hi, Robin.
But it was not Robin D. It was actually Robin B. who was inquiring about the long move on gold that you had talked about, and if he's asking if you can give him any more details.
I'm sorry. Is he asking Bert or is he asking me? Because either one is fine.
Either one.
No, I think he was referring to the July, because I think you mentioned July 24th is maybe an important date for gold.
Yeah, what we're looking at right now is, it's normally July 24th would be, this is, by the way, is not reflected wave, but normally July 24th would be a bottom in gold. Let me just lay that out just as a basic thing. Now, this is just a spatial relationship or roadmap type of viewpoint. Yesterday, gold made a bottom at 1562, and that... even yesterday we mentioned they may have done it one day early. And so let me take a look and see. The first thing that they would do, and let me take a look at that bottom. I haven't done this until we just are talking about it now, so give me just a moment. You'd go to 1578, and today's high is 1584. So we're going to close. We're trading at 1577. So we're trading very close to the initial... These are minor targets, but the initial move, because the market's very compressed, the initial move off of the normally July 24th bottom, and you remember we've talked about July 24th being important across a number of markets, would normally take it to 1578. Had a person gone long, had that been your trade, you'd be booking something at the 1578 level. Now, as it is, they got a little above that today. They got to 1584. How they closed today in regards to 1578 is important. Now, tomorrow, if we continue to start trading above 1578, that initial target, that actually would be a point that I would then want to look inside the market, so to speak, smaller time frames, and be looking potentially to buy. But I want you to know that since the market is in a very compressed phase right now where it's narrowing down, I'm not as crazy just yet. I know a lot of people want to buy the coiled up spring and be right about it, but I wouldn't mind just giving a little bit more time here unless you see something really good. Let's let them get through this. And certainly the 1578 level is going to be important. You'll see as the market plays out. how they close today regarding that target and then into tomorrow. So I wouldn't be suggesting to you, Robin, at this point to be long. What would have got me to suggest that to you is if today, the 24th, had itself made the low. Since it came in one day early, that's giving me some pause, and I would rather, you know, I'm very conservative about this stuff. I'm not in the markets like I, for the same reasons that I used to be. I'm here to make some money. In the old days, you know, I lost money the old-fashioned way. I traded it. Now I make money by investing. And what that means is, and I don't mean to sound cocky by saying that, but my overall outlook has changed dramatically over the years. I'm not interested in trading unless there's something very clear for me. And sometimes by waiting for that, you miss it. Sometimes by waiting for that, you miss a good portion of it. But we've done pretty well doing just that. It's almost like, I'm not aligning myself with the man who said this, but like the Rothschild statement, whoever it was that said, somebody said, I made a lot of money never, you know, getting the top or the bottom, or I can't remember what he said, but it's something like that, where it, certainty has become a much greater part of my real reason for trading. And if they don't show it to me, I just don't trade it. And I've come to terms with that. I've met that standard internally to myself, and therefore I don't feel the normal tugs and pulls of, well, don't you just kind of want to do something? Don't you want to try to just make $200 today? That kind of thing doesn't really operate in me like it used to. So I'm not coming from that perspective. I'm coming from the perspective of, hey, here's a really big, you know, let's say there's a quarterly top in soybeans or a monthly top in something, and the market starts to show us, or like what we saw the other day with the reflected wave daily, July 19th, inside the weekly top, that's big. That's something that I want to put something on. And we, you know, that's a classic setup for us. And you don't see that every day. And there's all kinds of, there's many, many different kinds of, you know, quote-unquote classic setups, and every system has their own. But I'm interested in those, and I really am not interested in the others. So gold right now, it's, you know, yeah, there's something happening here with this date, but it's not quite enough to really get me to take a hold of it or want to suggest anything just yet. I would have been more interested if the 24th today, if it didn't come in one day early, and that we were, you know, putting that low in today. And I basically said the same thing yesterday, that it may have come in one day early, and that gives me some pause, you know. So I hope that's helpful, but it's not an outright trade here. And as if you take a look at gold, you can see that they're wedging down right here, and I want to be more careful with that. It is fun to be in the market when it breaks out, but you even have to get over fun. You just have to want to understand and see what it is you understand and trade that thing. And when that becomes your primary focus, you know, not fun, not making money, not being able to, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, when all those things sort of fall away, there really is kind of a maturing. You come to your own place where you're saying, hey, I need to figure out why I'm doing this, you know, because I'm just spinning my wheels here. And that thing for me is, it's got to be easy, it's got to be obvious, and I've got to be there to do it. And if those three things are in place, I put those trades on. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that we do, we've talked about this many times, a lot of our stuff is options. We buy and sell thousands of options. There's no question about it. We've been in zillions of them this year alone. And we do that because a lot of that type of trading doesn't require tick-for-tick watching of the market. That makes it easier on us. And we've shown our statements. You know, we have an ongoing statement that we've been showing for a full year. And we'll continue to show that statement, you know, win, lose, or draw, utilizing options in the market. And we're certainly not going to put a trade on in spite of the success of that unless the market makes it easy. And they do. The funny thing is that the market will make it easy if you wait. They won't necessarily make it as easy as you want it, but they make it a whole lot easier than really tricky behavior. And so, and sometimes really tricky behavior can be a really easy trade. One of my favorites, and I've talked about this many times, is to be stopped out of a trade. It's not that I want to be stopped out or like it, but to be stopped out and then have the market reconfirm the original setup can be a fabulous entry point. And, you know, whatever that means to you and your setups. With us, it may have something to do with, like, as an example, the market, you know. Well, you know what? We had something just recently, and I wasn't going to mention this, but I might as well. Okay, here we go. I told this to Bert the other day, but I just want to say it for the record because it's a great example. Back on the 16th of July, we said, this was based on a roadmap type of thing, that the market would normally fail at 1352 or something and then go down to 34. Okay? And instead, this happens to be an inversion. The market broke out and ran up, and we said if it breaks out above that 53, we're going to run up to 68 or whatever the number was at the time. Now, they really, in quote-unquote our way of looking at it, they really shouldn't have done that, but they did do it. But having done that, the moment they got to the July 19th top, they turned right around and slammed the market down, and the first place they went to was 32 in 2 days, boom, boom, right after the 19th. So that's a good example of a fake out where they go the other way, and then they give you a signal for a short, and then boom, they take it right down to the original level. They basically crash down to the number that they were normally going to be at 2 days earlier. That type of setup. Now, we didn't trade it. This is hindsight. We didn't trade it based on that, you know, because we're not that smart. But we sometimes are able to do that. We sometimes are faked out, and then the market reconfirms, and then you get in, and you have one of the easiest trades you've ever been in. And you can tell when you get in, you can say, most people are probably not doing this, because it freaks you out, and it freaks out. If you feel it, most other people feel it. You're not that different. I know everybody likes to think that they're different, but when it comes to emotions, there's no East or West in it. Everybody's just about the same. And when the market does something, it scares most of us, or it makes most of us, you know, happy or whatever. We all feel a lot of the same types of feelings. And so when you get that kind of setup where you're faked out of a move and the market reconfirms, it closes back above an important level or takes out some level, those can be very powerful re-entries. And that's been that was a big thing for me many years ago, was the ability to see that happen, and in some cases to be able to trade it. And we've done that, and it's been fabulous. It's a great piece. It's a skill that you can learn. There's nothing mystical about this. There's some mysticism perhaps about the nature of the market and why it moves to levels and how come it does this and does that. There does seem to be some mysticism to that. However, there's no mysticism in actually putting your knowledge of what you understand to work in the market. There's no mysticism there. You just take what you understand and work it. So, hope
can
that's
I ask
a,
you a question?
Sure.
When you were in that position where you were emotionally stuck, what did you do differently in that moment to to make that
I don't think I can take any credit for it. I think the truth is you get tired of your own level. I think the mm-hmm. truth is that, you know, you've put up with your own reactions, your own same reactions over and over and over again, and you finally come to a wall, and that wall is, I'm the problem, not the market. And you might mm-hmm. be able to read that or say that, but to experience that and actually take it for what it really is changing. That's life-changing.
Right.
And so for me, it changes your level. And I mm-hmm. realized that I was fighting. It's almost like when you're, you know, let's say you have somebody at the office or something you work at, and you're always at odds with that person. You might, maybe somebody in the audience works somewhere where you're constantly at odds with somebody in your office. You can't stand that person. I have news for you. No matter how obnoxious that person is, the majority of what you're feeling is you, not
right.
them.
Right.
And so in much the same way, the market, much of what's happening to you in the market is you. The way that you are focusing on the market, what you're looking at, the way that you react to situations over and over and over again. So anyway, what happens is you just get fed up with a particular level that you're at, and that causes you to change. It's not so that you can sit there and take credit for that, like a person like, well, I thought this through, and then I realized this, and I did. It's just, you just get fed up, and you take a leap.
Okay, so would you say that you were surrendering to the market?
Yes, I would say, I know that's a phrase, and it almost sounds a little too poetic for me, but
or
yes.
Just the word surrender. You were surrendering yourself.
Yeah, I would say I was giving up, consciously giving up the same old responses. I knew that those were really the problem. No matter what the market was going to do, my same old responses were really what I was struggling with, and that I wasn't really in tune with the market. There's a really funny thing that happens. Your eyes land on the screen. You see the price movement, and in that split second, that first initial seeing is clear. And then a split second later, you take that clear vision and you muddle it up with everything you think is going to happen, or your way of looking at the market, on and on and on. And maybe your way is good and you've not had to go through this. It is rare, but that does happen. Some people just have a natural inclination towards markets, like people do for music, for art, for poetry, etc. But for me, that wasn't the case. And most people, I don't think it's the case. Most people have to come to some final truth in themselves that helps them jump and take a leap into another, you know, it's like a trading zone of Dwayne's. You know, you leap to another zone, and now from that new perspective, you see things differently, and you've made some progress.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah. But I certainly didn't say to myself, you know, well, here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah,
I was tired of here's what I'm going to do. That's what I had finally burned out on. All my here's what I'm going to do's finally burned out. And I said, there's no more here's what I'm going to do's left. I'm done with here's what I'm going to do, because it all had to do with me. It all had to do with where I was coming from, my old reactions. There was no here's what I'm going to do left. You're just hanging in the dark there. And in that darkness, real intelligence can operate. But if you are filled with here's what I'm going to do's, the intelligence can't get through to you. And you just keep doing the here's what I'm going to do. So at some point, you get fed up with that. And some other intelligence, which really is not your own. I'm not making this mystical. It's just not your conditioning. You're not speaking from the here's what I'm going to do's anymore. Something comes to you, and that takes you to this next level. And I think other people have, people have experienced this in all areas of life, you know.
I wanted you to define it, because I think it was a great quantum leap in your trading. And other people can take that and realize that if they just relax into it and
that's a good phrase. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just want to say something. This is a thing. It's almost in some ways like I've been around women in my life, earlier life, nervous and very because you're thinking you have to be a certain way and they need to see you in a certain light and all these things. This is, men can identify with this. And then at some point you finally get so tired of doing that, you just give it up. And for the first time, a woman actually is having a conversation with you, and you're enjoying it with her because you're not doing all those other here's what I'm going to do's in front of the woman. You're just being a normal human being. And in that, the flow of information suddenly is very easy and smooth and back and forth. And you're suddenly realizing, hey, I'm doing something I tried to do for 30 years here without even trying.
Right.
And it's like that. It's a leap like that with the market. You're tired of all the here's of what I'm going to do's and all your plans, and suddenly you're really interacting with the market. But see for yourself the truth of that when your eyes land on the screen, what you see, that first thing that you see, that's a fact. What you do with that fact, that second step, is very important for you to become aware of, because that's where all the good or the bad comes from. You know, the initial, that second step, the second thought, the here's what I'm going to do and all that. And so I don't think a person necessarily can force this upon themselves. It's kind of a thing like, I don't want to even use the word maturing, but it's just an ending of an old set of responses and the beginning of something that you couldn't have planned out for yourself. It's a break from the old.
Yeah, but just making them aware might have that shift come a little bit faster. That's what's really great.
You know, definitely have micro shifts.
Yeah.
You definitely can have little micro shifts and stuff like this. But this one for me, I've had a number of them. And one of them I told on the story on here, and I don't want to take much time today, but I just want to say, one of the big ones that I had was when my daughter was about maybe 16, and I had, this was in 1998, and I was trading my biggest at that time. The S&P was $500 per dollar. Movement, Bert certainly remembers this, other people do as well. And I was trading in anywhere from 15 to 25 contracts. I had stepped up in size. And that year, by the way, was my biggest year ever. I've talked about that on the program before. That year was my best trading year. However, at the end of that year, I felt like I needed to go to a hospital because I was so ill from all the ups and downs. But and I've never traded in that size again in terms of my own personal trading. You know, we have a fund that we trade we trade in large size. But the bottom line is that I remember I had a break, one of these things that happened to me where I was teaching my daughter to drive. And it was one of those wonderful days where, you know, here's your daughter. She's learning to drive. It's her big new thing. She's in the car next to you, and you're sitting next to her, and you're looking at her face as she's pushing the pedal, and she's realizing the instantaneousness of the movement and the freedom that she's going to have and all this that means everything to her. You're seeing it all on her face. You're having this wonderful father-son, father-daughter family day. And I went back into the home. And I picked up the phone. I just wanted to check on a position that I had on. And I've said this on the radio before. The guy answered the phone. He was in a really bad mood. And he just literally just spit the words out at me. And the position was about 8 or 9 points against me, which probably was, you know, $65,000, $70,000 worth against me. And at that moment, I had a big break. I realized, you know, that was one of my – that was a defining moment for me, that I couldn't enjoy my life. I couldn't enjoy all these things because – of the manner in which I was employing my money and myself and my psychology into the market. And I remember putting my head down on the table, and I just, with my head down, I was just blacked out. I was just completely in darkness. I don't know how to describe it, and everybody's been through it on some level when something big breaks in your life. And I had really, at that point, realized that I was the problem. And that I was doing this, that the guy that was spitting on the phone didn't do it to me, it wasn't the market, that something I was doing was wrong, and that was a break for me. And I've had a number of those. You know, you do this 22 years, and I'm sure, what's his name, Mike Reed, who's been in this for almost 30, has probably had a number of these as well. If you trade in, you know, if you're really putting some money up and trading this, whatever that means to you, it puts extra pressure on. And so I've had a number of these. I've probably had four really big ones in my career that have been life-changing. And you get to the point where you get to the point. That's what happens. And the point is to make money. It's not to risk money. It's not to have fun. It has nothing to do with any of that, even though it can be all those things. If any of those things are your primary objective, then your eye's off the ball. The ball is a high-probability trading setup. That's the ball. Period. That is the ball. And if your eyes are off that ball, then you're not going to get it quite right. Even if you're on the fun ball or some other ball that feels good, your eyes have to be on that ball first. All the other balls that you might want to have in play have to be secondary to that. And so I got to the point. And that has been – that's, you know, I've been talking about that for 7 years here, and that made a big difference to me. Do I still take trading losses? Yes. But my – The way that we interact with the market is dramatically different than how we used to. And it's a very emotional subject because I had to go through hell to get here.
Well, most successful traders have been. I don't think I've met anybody that's successful that hasn't had some, big story. There's nobody I've ever met.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the reality of the game. The key thing is to get through quick.
Yeah, you want to get through it quick. You want to rebound from it as quickly as you can, and you want to find out who you are. It really is a self-discovery process because the market is going to do what it's going to do. And just remember what I said because this, I mean, I'm just saying it for anybody who wants to think about it. When your eyes first land on that screen, that's pure. 1 second later, what you do with it is a whole different story. And so why am I saying that? Because the fact is that what you do with the market information and how you process it and how it, you know, how the here's what I'm going to do is maybe you're close to the point, you being anybody, that you have to review this. And in order to stay in the market over a number of years, you have to keep your eye on the ball. You have to realize that the ball for me is high probability trading setup. That's the ball. There is no other ball for me. The ball isn't making money. The ball is finding a high probability trading setup. All the other balls, like making money and protecting your risk, all those are other issues, but finding that high probability trade is the ball for me. And then once I have that, I can go work with the other ones. And you can tell sometimes you're off track. You don't feel like, I remember when we came back from July 4th vacation, I didn't have the feeling I was connected to the market, and I couldn't even find the ball. I mean, I know what a hyper, sometimes you're just not connected. And you just relax your way through that. I don't fight this anymore. I do not want to be in a fight. I'm tired of being in a fight, and I'm not going to be in a fight. And so it's my way or the highway when I'm trading. If they show me the highway, then it's not my way. And if they show me my way, then I'm in on that, and I want to participate in that. And so those are the terms that I came to in my own trading, and I'm not trying to satisfy anything else really in the end except for the high probability trade setup. If it's good, and we have professionals that call us and talk to us about setups, and they have their ball that they're watching. They want to get in really early, as an example, on a move. Fair enough. I'll give you the best information I can, but that's not how I want to do it. And you have to find out how you want to do it, because what's right for me may not be necessarily right for you. In general, I think it's right to think in terms of high probability setups, though, as the main ball that you want to find. And then all the other ones will take care of themselves. And if you find a really good trade and you miss it, you can just laugh it off, because you're not even where you used to be at all. It's not all. If you hear yourself saying, I mean, I just want to say this, this is junior high school in trading. Oh, I got out here and it went another 8 points. I can't believe I got out. That's junior high. You've got to move on from there. You've got to move on from that type of thinking, that kind of thing. You've got to find out who you are and connect with this market in a much deeper way than simply getting a few points out of it and complaining about the rest. That's not going to do it for you. Even the very best techniques that are available for trading in the market, and one of my biggest all-time techniques is reflected wave. Doesn't matter what you have, if you're trading from a junior high school perspective, you're going to drive yourself crazy, and in doing that, you're going to trade poorly. So, yeah, there you are.
Those are really very, very powerful points. So, you know, if you're listening or in any of those stages, you know, just be aware of, you know, how you're thinking in that moment, and, you know, like David mentioned, that first minute is the key, because that's pure and that's real.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what typically will happen is that your mind's emotions and your subconscious starts to kick in, and all that doubt and all this other garbage.
Desire and everything else.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff come in. That's what you gotta really stop. And to stop that, you know, focus on what your setup is and just keep discipline to that. That's why discipline is the biggest word in every book you read in trading.
Mm-hmm.
It's just being disciplined to your system. Whatever your system is, be disciplined to that system and keep fine-tuning it till it gives you the high probability.
Yeah.
That's fabulous.
You know what it is. I don't have anything that anybody else doesn't have. And even the best trader, you know, we know this fellow named Mike that trades tens of thousands of contracts a day. He's just simply employing what he has. He's doing it at a very high level, and that's, we can all do that. We can all employ what we have at the very best level that we have it. And, you know, I hope it's helpful. I want people to succeed. I want people to feel good about the markets. I don't want you to go to bed sweating. I don't want you to wake up, you know, hurting or anxious about the markets. I don't do that anymore. I don't live that life. I lived that life for 10 years or more. And I'm done with that life. And in order to not live it, I didn't have to go on a mountain and proclaim I don't live that life anymore. I just took the leap because it all caught up with me. And at some point I realized I can't do this anymore. I have to change. And that change gave me the next whole leg of my career and allowed me to trade happily. And I don't mean that in a funny way. I mean, I'm happy. I enjoy this. I'll continue doing it. It's not torture anymore. Stop torturing yourself, Gomez. That's my job. That's from the Adams family.
I think that's so fabulous. That really is great insight, David. And I appreciate you sharing that with people, because I think, you know, again, traders will sit there and go, you know, am I crazy? And, you know, they get so incensed about, every little tiny thing, that they don't enjoy their life and have balance. I think
exactly.
balance is critical, too. You've got to have that balance, and,
yeah.
and I think that that little story about your daughter is critical. I mean, you know, the time that you have with your family and the people that are your loved ones, you know, you don't know when that's going to end. You don't anything can happen any day.
Yeah.
Via accident, and you've thrown that time away. You have to have balance, and that keeps you more sane when you go to trade.
Yeah.
You know, that balance really just helps you stay grounded and stay centered. It's so important. It's just mm-hmm. so important.
Yeah, it's like, have you ever been in a dentist chair? You know, everybody goes to the dentist. You better go to the dentist. If you haven't gone to the dentist in a while, you might want to. And you're in the dentist chair, and they've numbed you up. And they're drilling on you. Have you ever noticed how tense you get, even though you don't feel any pain? But as they're doing that drilling, you know, your hands are tense. And, I last time I was at a dentist, several times I've done this, where you make a very, you know, direct effort to simply relax while your tooth is being drilled. You're not feeling pain. I know you're worried that you're going to feel pain. That's part of the tension. But just simply relax. There's an amazing thing, there's a lesson in that, which is that here's all this stuff going on that you normally would tense up with. There's the tension's really not necessary. You could literally relax your way through that trouble, through that period. And it's amazing to be in a dental chair and actually relax while your teeth are being drilled. Try it sometime. Hopefully you don't need your teeth to be drilled. But if you do, and you're in the dentist's office, see if you can consciously relax. You might only do it for a second. You might only do it 2 seconds or something. But the funny thing is you can do it. And in the end, you can do that with the rest of your life, too. You don't have to
What's
turn.
What's the danger that you might start to levitate? Is that an issue? Or
That would be if you were smoking some of the materials that come from other parts of the earth that I wouldn't know about, Dwayne. Levitate. Why would we levitate, though?
I don't know, because you're getting all, like, relaxed out and, you know, the thing.
Oh, well, just relax. My point is you, if you can do that and feel the difference and you realize that you can do it, you can do that same thing in your daily life. You see
sure.
that person in the office you don't like, you can relax your way through it rather than tensing your way through it.
Right.
You see somebody in traffic, they pull in front of you, you can relax your way through that the same way you can at a dentist's office. Before you know it, you realize, hey, I have a whole tool here called relax. It's not just a thing, it's a tool.
Yep. Well, it's, you know, it's really your thought process, and that's why I said the power that you have is within your thought process, and we don't yeah. realize how powerful that can be and how it can shift us in the moment.
Yeah.
So, you know, using that in the moment as you trade is really, really powerful, but use it. You got to be conscious of using it, not just let the subconscious take over.
Yeah, the emotional push to tense up and to all that stuff, it's just mechanical. And it's really a life-changing, in a way, experience to relax in something that has always tensed you up. The person, the girl, the drilling on your teeth, the whatever. And when you realize, wow, I actually, for a split second, relaxed, and I actually felt wonderful right in the middle of what normally is pure tension for me. And before you know it, you actually realize that is a magic, life-changing thing that you can do. You have the power over that to apply your own relaxation to something, including trading, including your outlook on life, and all that stuff. I mean, literally, you could take it to the level where you're having a heart attack. You could literally be so deep into being able to do this that you could say to yourself, oh, I'm having a heart attack. That's
oh,
it.
Yeah. You can talk yourself right into any symptom you want. That's why.
No. I'm actually saying the reverse of that. I'm actually saying.
Or talk yourself out of it. Yeah.
Not even talk yourself out of it. There's a fact going on, and your heart is going wrong, and you're having a heart attack. A person could be so attuned to relaxing through things that
uh-huh.
he could relax
uh-huh.
himself even through. He could say to himself, "Oh, I'm having a heart attack," and that's all. Nothing negative. Nothing else. He just is relaxed. I know it sounds almost ridiculous, but this can go very, very far. It can go much further than what a person might think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, when my mom was sick, I would give her messages like that, you know, and she would start to get tense and whatever, and I would give her, you know, conscious thoughts of, you know, you feeling, remember when we were on the beach and we were just lying in the sunshine and how nice mm-hmm. it was over there. And so just created the atmosphere for her, and all of a sudden her body would just relax. And
mm-hmm.
it was fabulous.
Yeah, no, it's very good.
Fabulous.
So, yeah, the bigger picture is try to relax around this thing called trading and relax your way through it. Don't turn it into torture. And you'll find you can do wonderful things just with that tool alone. And that allows some intelligence in, because when you're cramped up in a little tight little ball and you're trying to do just about anything, you don't do it very well. Look at golfers, how much they're taught to sort of relax and hit the thing. Don't tense up, you know, relax, let your natural. There's so much of that going. Psychologically, that'll allow you to do things that you never thought possible because you're just habitually tensing up in these same situations.
Well, it'll be interesting.
Like Wayne said, you might even float out of the chair. I mean,
yeah, and you might want to watch when the Olympics are happening. I'll bet you'll see a lot of mind things happening there. That's really a fabulous place to see the thought process, and you'll hear the commentator, and they're really stressed, and they had an injury yesterday, and I don't know if they can recover from that, and the announcer gets more upset than the athlete does sometimes, and yet you'll see an athlete totally overcome it. The interesting one that'll be coming up, I think, will be the swimming match with the two swimmers, because it's just going to be really interesting because one guy has a totally different approach to life than the other, and it's going to be interesting to see who wins. So that's a great way to see it. But I hope this was helpful for everybody. I think the psychology stuff is really important, and I love when David opens up.
He gets
so serious about what he's done, because really the experiences he's gone through and the introspective approach that he's taken with his mind is fabulous. Really, I mean, it's so insightful for a lot of people, and you just express it really well.
Well, I hope, I think my thing is to be able to express it at all, because sometimes things happen and it's very hard to put them into words. But everybody goes through this on some level in their life. It just happened to, when you're around anything for this long, you'll go through something, and those are the periods where you can make big leaps and you become a changed person on a certain level, and that changes the way you view things, and you're just not going to do them the way you used to do them. And that's just all there is to it. And you put your foot down. Put your foot down in life. put your foot down in life. Don't be afraid of doing that, because, somebody told you, your Sunday school teacher said you're supposed to be a nice person. Well, you know what? Don't mistake niceness for weakness.
Right.
Put your foot down when you're supposed to. And that means with yourself first. You save others for later. Yourself first. That's the right order. Anyway, I hope that's good. And Dwayne, anything else? I think we've covered all the markets we can cover for today, and the S&P is.
Well, there was a question from FM. A question for David about soybeans. He had said a few weeks ago that the week of 7-2 was a reflected wave top.
Let me take a look.
That it can be plus or minus one unit of time. A week in this example, it appears that reflected wave was inaccurate in its prediction. Have I missed something?
No. Actually, let's go back to that. There was two things. Monthly top in April, which I don't know what date we came up with that, but the monthly top for a reflected wave in April was an on-time top from which the market declined and then advanced into June. And what we said at the time, if I'm not mistaken, was that if the market broke out above the, I think it was, and honestly, we're talking now about an older contract. We just switched into a new one, but it was probably somewhere around $15 and something cents. If it broke above that, the likelihood was that the top would be either less important or not valid. We wanted to see the market stay below a certain top, and I don't have the recording right in front of me. So in this particular case, they certainly broke way, way, way above that top. The 1509, I'm using a price now that is really related to a different contract. So whatever it was back then when we first said this, maybe it was not that long ago. Hold on. wasn't that long ago, but we just switched today. So what? It's a close price, whatever the number is, roughly speaking, $15.09. You know, they went up to $17.77. So they did break out above that, and that top, we were looking for them to hold above it. Now, having said that, I do want to say that in doing so, in that breakout, because of the way that reflected wave works, one of the reasons we mentioned that is because the breakout itself would indicate the quarterly top that we talked about today. So that quarterly is larger than weekly. That overrides weekly. And so that's why we were talking earlier with Bert that the next quarterly top now is due in the last quarter of this year. Now, reflected wave also, I do want to mention, reflected wave isn't 100% perfect. It's just the very best that I've been able to find in any turning point methodology because of the several things that it's capable of doing. The majority of all the turning points are plus or minus one unit of time. So let's just say that that was incorrect. Let's just say forget the breakout. Let's just say that it was incorrect. That can happen. And when that does happen, by the way, in reflected wave, that is a trading signal unto itself. If the market has the power to move, we're talking about powers and forces here. If the market can move past a ordinary reflected wave, top or bottom, and close above it, take a look. We went up 200 plus cents from that breakout. And we went up substantially, maybe $2.50, 250 cents above that. In reflected wave and in our seminar, if the market does break out above a reflected wave top and just continues to move through it, that by itself is its own buying signal. Bet you it's real difficult to take it, because your bias is that it's going to reverse. But in most cases, what that means is a much larger force is required to push the market through a weekly top. A weekly top is pretty big, pretty sizable. And if the market has the ability to walk through that, that means a much larger force is expressing itself, and you definitely want to be long. So let's just eliminate everything else, and let's just say reflected wave was just wrong. It went an extra week beyond that before reversing. But in doing so, in that 1 week, it went up another 200 plus cents or whatever it was, you know, it did from the breakout. Not that 1 week, but the couple of weeks up. Because the week that we were talking about originally was the 1 week late was July 9th, if you were just taking it on its own face. But from July 9th's close, as an example, 1642 to the recent high, 1776, you know, another dollar, another 150 cents. Something bigger than weekly is at work. Or was at work on the upside. So I hope that clarifies it. It's not 100% perfect, but what reflected wave allows you to do is see multiple time frames where things are happening inside other things and allow you to really put together, like we've done on the radio program so many times, really, really good forecasts for the likely move that the market's going to make. We're looking for the highest probability of what the market's going to do. A good example, again, sorry to hammer, is the July 19th top inside the July 2nd weekly top. Well, the July 2nd weekly top came 1 week late on July 2nd. That was actually 1 week late. But then the market had the big decline. Then it put in the July 12th daily bottom. That was 1 day late. And then it rallied up to the July 19th top, testing the top on the weekly, the July 2nd weekly top. Those are trades, you know, setups within setups that are really how I use reflected wave. You can use it on a one time frame basis and call tops and bottoms on a particular time frame, but the magic of it goes beyond that for me. It's you know, using it on different time frames and tying these things together. So I hope that answers the question, and I do would like you to watch and remember that the quarterly top that we're talking about is coming in, and so that means we're going to do the same thing that we just did with the S&P. We want to watch the subsequent movement coming into the last quarter, and if we put in a daily reflected wave top inside the 1 unit early quarterly, as an example, that would be a first place for us to sell. And then later, if the on-time month comes in, we're going to do the same thing. On-time quarter comes in, we're going to do the same thing. Look for tops that occur inside the quarterly top, smaller weekly tops, as an example, inside of a quarterly, etc. One other thing that reflected wave does, which is something that we teach at the seminar, is that when a top gets put in on a particular time frame, reflected wave will tell you what time frame to trade it down to or up to, which is a really kind of a remarkable thing because it doesn't address price movement. It addresses time, and it lets you hold on to a position much longer than most people would if they were just simply staring at price and watching price move by. So I'll go into more detail about this if you want and have not come to the seminar. You can come on Thursday to our webinar. You can go to pagetrader.com, click on the trader's blog, and that will take you over to Reflected Wave. Every turning point I've called, with rare exception, on this radio program, and there's been thousands of them over the last 7 years, calls for tops and bottoms has been based on Reflected Wave. So if you go back, you know, with all the stuff is archived, you can see there's just on and on and on and on and on. And I'm quite aware when I'm making these calls, I'm in front of potentially thousands of people utilizing this. I have a great deal of confidence in Reflected Wave. And we've shown it over the years to be very, very useful in calling tops and bottoms. For many, many years, I didn't teach it. For 17 years, it was my own thing. And now I'm having the seminar. And just like I've said before, in teaching the seminar, I've gotten better myself at utilizing it and tying some of the old stuff, some of the stuff that I'm teaching you as new stuff that I had thought about from time to time, I'm actually utilizing it better myself because I'm teaching it. So I invite you to come Thursday. It'll be 15 minutes after the S&P closes, 1:30 Pacific time, 3:30 Chicago time, 4:30 Eastern time. So hope that answers the question. And I welcome any questions about any of the calls that we make. There's no harm, no foul. You know, if it is what it is, and we come out and we do it, very much like what one of the things I like about the program is that all of us put our stuff out there. We're not just referring to old charts and saying, here's what it did in the past. We're making calls all the time. Dwayne, myself, and any other trading guests, we're doing the stuff we're talking about in real time. So there you are.
All right. I think that
so, Dwayne, I've taken a lot of your time up here today.
Questions. Yeah. Alan, one last question from Alan, and then we'll cut it off. Can I get an update on CBR?
CBR, is that that's got to be a stock.
Yes.
Is that a stock?
It is.
Let's see. Let's take a look. So CBR is a stock. Let's take a quick look and see if we have anything interesting here. CBR is on a breakout right now on the downside. One thing I will tell you with regard to this stock is that there's two prices that are important to me in the stock. $3.51 is one of them, which they almost reached today. And then another one for me would be $3.41. For the time being, Alan, I would say this. Because they did break out on the downside here, I would want to sell rallies, if you're mind to do that, if that's a day trading thing. But if you're looking to be long or already are long and looking for a place for this to turn, I would give them the time, and I would want to see how they act at $3.41. And I know that doesn't sound that far off, but in a $3.50 stock, it's a decent move down to $3.41, and I want to see what they do at that level. And if you ask me about it on another day, I might be able to set up something else a little bit more involved with this stock that we could make a call for, you know, where it might be over a particular period of time, that sort of thing. So there you are. This stock, by the way, for people who want to know, this stock made a high at $40.88 or so back in 1998. It's today trading at $3.53. I don't know what they do, but they're not doing it real well.
Alan, what do they do? I think you've told us before, but I forget. They are in networking.
Okay. So,
is
yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just looking at the chart that was currently up as well. Is there a level underneath this, under the 1327?
Nope. That's the lowest level we have for the week.
Mm-hmm.
So we may trade lower, but by the time close of business rolls around on Friday, we expect to be back above 2728. David, he mentioned some numbers that he has that are lower.
Yeah, and that's just off the cuff stuff. It's not in our support. It's not in our, you know, support and resistance panel. But somebody asked, and I just gave the generality of it there. We're breaking to new lows right now, as we see. We're down below it. So, and then you had your Kong as well, and we talked about that.
I just
that
want to tell you, my Kong is zero today. It's holding at that 780.
Well, we told you the July 24th date for a bottom for Kong also, you know, that there's quite a few things that have the July 24th date, and Kong was one of them. So this is reflected wave. So we'll see how that plays out. And Alan, I'll keep an eye on the CBR. I might be able to put something together for you. I don't have anything more than wanting right now. My first impression is I want to see them hit $3.41. That'd be the first thing I want to see them.
Their earnings report is due out next week, so that was part of why he was asking. So.
Okay.
Yep, we're definitely breaking the new lows here. We're closing in on 25.
Mm-hmm. And we're at 25 right now.
Yep. I have my blonde joke. My blonde joke and quote of the day. Do you want to listen to that before you leave?
Of course.
Okay. A Russian and an American and a blonde were talking one day. The Russian said, "We were in space first." The American said, "We were on the moon first." And the blonde said, "So what? We're going to be first on the sun." And the Russian and the American looked at each other in shock and shook their heads. "You can't land on the sun, you idiot. You'll burn up," said the Russian. The blonde said, replied, "We're not stupid, you know. We're going to go at night."
That's funny. I knew that punchline ahead of time, but it was still a little bit funny.
You did?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Oh. Okay, well, I'm going to have to find some new ones. And here's the quote for the day. "We cannot escape fear. We can only transform it into a companion that accompanies us on all our exciting adventures. Take a risk a day. One small or bold stroke that will make you feel great once you've done it." That's by Susan Jeffers.
Okay, Dwayne, so I'll plan on seeing you guys tomorrow. Robin, you and Dwayne and Michael, see you guys tomorrow.
All right, David.
Put it together then.
Have a great afternoon.
Thanks very much. I'll see you then.
Bye, David.
Bye-bye, Robin.
Mind, guys, earnings season is in full swing, and so I know that most of you close out your positions each day before the final bell. If you do maintain positions overnight, stuff can happen. I believe Apple reports this afternoon with a couple of other heavyweights, so it can gap in your favor, it can gap against you. So give some thought always about leaving positions open overnight, but in particular, during earnings season, it's a little more dangerous. So just be careful. And Robin, anything you want to add?
Yes, I want to mention to people that YouTube video is up, Qualities of a Winning Trader. If you do a search on Qualities of a Winning Trader, it'll come up. I did a search on my name. It comes up, but it's like a couple pages past. But Qualities of a Winning Trader come up faster on the YouTube. And check it out. It's free. It was one we did at MetaStock. It's a new presentation. And it's up there. And I think there's a link on my site, but I'm not sure. You'll be better off going to YouTube right now because she's still updating the website.
Quality.
And have a great day. Be safe, everybody. Have a great day. And Dwayne, thank you so much. And we will see you tomorrow.
Qualities of a Winning Trader's Mindset.
Yeah,
isn't that the correct name?
Trader, and that no S. Oh. Qualities of a Winning Trader should bring it up.
There you go. Right there.
You
can go to robindane.com. Oh, my, what's this?
I think that's it, too. Oh, that's you. I think you have the link on there, too, maybe.
Dun,
I sent you the link. Yeah, there you go.
There you go, guys.
I sent you the link.
And for those of you on the free trial, we've made some very special arrangements with Robin. I've spelled it all out for you here, right on the blog. So,
yep.
If you don't know how to get to the blog from the homepage of CFRN.net, simply click Visit Our Blog. It'll take you there straight away. Watch the video. And then, right here, we've made some special arrangements to work with traders who apply for a free trial to receive a short evaluation as an added bonus. At the end of your one-week free trial, you'll receive instructions to set up your appointment for 15 to 20 minutes of one-on-one time with Robin Dane. During the call, Robin will ask a series of questions to evaluate your current trading situation and make recommendations for the best course of action to move you up to the next level of your trading journey. Now, Robin's been coaching and guiding traders of all levels for the past 20 years. As such, her time is extremely valuable and limited. As part of your one-week free trial here at CFRN, you'll gain access to knowledge often afforded only to the inner circle of high-end hedge funds. This special bonus could very well be the key that unlocks the door to your personal success as an e-mini futures trader. However, sessions are extremely limited, and on a first-come basis, we cannot guarantee how long this unique opportunity will be available, so I encourage you to apply for your free trial today. You just click the link. Takes you right to the page, tells you everything you need to know. If you get lost, there's a phone number, there's an email address. You fill this out, we'll get you up and running. All right? All right. Robin, thanks so much.
Thank you, Dwayne.
Have a great afternoon, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in, guys, whoever you are, wherever you are. May God continue to richly bless you with his mercy and with his grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions.